Well, good evening. I also had the opportunity of going on the St. Vincent trip, and it really was cool to see just how God worked through all of the teens. I could see them growing. I could see myself growing and being stretched. And it was also just amazing to see how God was sovereign in all the circumstances that we went through, whether it be on our way getting there or just how the different events played out where our luggage was, none of it was overweight, and they held flights for us and things like that. It was amazing just to see how in control God was in, you could say, getting his servants down to the field. We were ready to go, and he led us on the way that he wanted to go. And that actually leads into our passage that we have tonight. We're in 1 Samuel 19, continuing our series in 1 Samuel. And just to kind of catch you up where we are, at the end of chapter 18, the tension between Saul and David is really starting to heat up. And Saul is he has gotten the evil spirit that was sent from the Lord that was prompting him to go after David. And he started to be afraid of David. We hear about the part where they had each been in war, and all of the people were saying that Saul has killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And Saul is feeling a little bit of pressure from David, and he's starting to realize that, uh-oh, I might be in trouble here. And with his distressed spirit, he starts his attempts to try and kill David. And in chapter 18, he sends David out to kill Philistines in order to obtain Saul's daughter as his wife. And he's hoping, he gives him an enormous task, hoping that that will kill him, basically, and completely take him out of line. So he tries all these tricky, different ways of trying to kill David, as well as throwing the spear at him. But all in all, it doesn't work. And if we look at the end of chapter 18 in verse 28, it says, Thus Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war. And so it was, whenever they went out, that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. So we can see in context that Saul, he's distressed. He's afraid of David now. And as we go into chapter 19, we're going to see how Saul, he ramps up his attempts to kill David. And we'll also be able to see how God protects his servant through all of these different circumstances. He uses different people, different avenues, and even his own divine intervention to protect David and to show his complete rejection of Saul. So let's start out in 1 Samuel 19, verse 1. Now Saul spoke to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, "My father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning, and stay in a secret place and hide. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. Then what I observe, I will tell you." Thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been very good towards you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause?" So Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan, and Saul swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things. So Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. And it all ends happily ever after, and nothing else. No problem happens, right? I think we know a little bit differently. But it seems like everything's resolved. Everything is completely okay. So Jonathan convinced Saul, and we're okay. But We'll see later that there was different plans ahead. But this first act of Saul wanting to kill is really a transition that he says, I want to kill David. He flat out lays it out for Jonathan and his servants. And he actually, in this chapter, purposes to kill David 5 times. He either says it or is in the act of trying to do it. But Jonathan greatly delights in David. He is one of David's best friends, and he, of course, does not want to see David killed, but he also has loyalty to Saul. And that's kind of an interesting dilemma. But as you can see through this, Jonathan lays out the truth. He looks at what the truth is about what David has done, and that David is chosen, that he has done things for the Lord, and he's innocent. And he relies on that truth when he is talking to his father. And we can see in verse 4 that Jonathan gives 3 warnings to Saul. He says, thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant, against David. First of all, he says, because he has not sinned against you. Secondly, because his works have been very good towards you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine. And the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. And then thirdly, he says, why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause? So Jonathan is not trying to convince Saul's like, no, I really like David, and I really think he's a good guy, and he really would be a benefit to your kingdom and things like that. No, he is saying exactly what has happened. He lays out the truth, saying that he has not sinned against you. He has even gone into battle and put his own life at stake and conquered the Philistines. And the Lord brought deliverance. Even in this part, you can see the focus on the Lord that Jonathan and David both have. And as we go throughout this whole passage, you'll see differences that different times where you can completely see the Lord's hand on all of this. And Jonathan saw it, and he showed it to Saul and said, the Lord delivered him, but he used David. So therefore, if Saul is going against David, he is going against the man that God is using to win the battles. He's going against Israel's hero. He's going against the chosen one that God has given to Israel. And then he concludes it by saying, will you sin against innocent blood? David hasn't done anything to you. Why would you kill him? He's innocent. And then it says that Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan, and he swore, as the Lord lives, he shall not be killed. And especially in these days, oaths were not something that you just flippantly gave out. This was serious. And he said, as the Lord lives, he shall not be killed. And then Jonathan calls David, and they all come back together, and David was in Saul's presence just as before. But look at how things change so quickly. In verse 8, it says, and there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled from him. Now the distressing spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. And David was playing music with his hand. Then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear. But he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night. We've heard this story a bunch, but we should be saying, wow, that escalated quickly. In 2 verses, you went from Saul has said, David shall not be killed, and he was in his presence as before. And then 2 verses later, he throws a spear at him. That's kind of going against the oath that he laid out. But God uses the distressing spirit that he gives him to accomplish what he wants. He is showing all throughout this chapter that he completely rejects Saul and is approving David. And we see it just as it lays out that God's chosen one, David, Saul had sent Jonathan, his servants, and everyone after him, but he was saved because of Jonathan's doing. And now he comes into a face-to-face confrontation with Saul, but the Lord protects him from the spear as well. And we can see constantly through this just the Lord's protection in the circumstances. We can see how even though it seems like we shouldn't be, we should be insulated from these types of dangers and these types of troubles, but David definitely was not insulated from danger. He had danger for the majority of his life. He had a king going against him. But God does that for us too. Sometimes he allows us to be put into situations that we don't understand and that are difficult and might even be dangerous. Maybe not physically, but maybe in just people that might talk against you or people that might try to belittle you, or maybe in a job situation where they are trying to lie about you and get you out of the job so they can magnify themselves and get a promotion or something like that. And it seems like us as Christians, if we're following God, we should be able to just steer clear of that and God should protect us. But he allows us to go through these dangers. As we saw last week, sometimes it is so that we can be molded. And other times, it's just so God can show his power. God can show who he is through us. And we see that even in this situation, God uses Saul's jealousy, the jealousy that he has from seeing David's success against what he wants to be personally successful. And he uses that to continue his plan, even though it looks like it's a failed assassination attempt, but God still uses it. And as we continue, we see that God doesn't just use people that have everything together or people that are completely rejecting him, but he also uses others that might be part of our lives that in different ways that we might not understand. And so as we keep going, in verse 11, it says, Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed. So Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. And Michal took an image and laid it in the bed, put a cover of goat's hair for his head, and covered it with clothes. So when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, he is sick. Then Saul sent the messengers back to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed, that I may kill him. And when the messengers had come in, there was the image in the bed, with a cover of goat's hair for his head. Then Saul said to Michal, why have you deceived me like this, and sent my enemy away, so that he has escaped? And Michal answered Saul, he said to me, let me go. Why should I kill you? So David fled and escaped and went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and stayed in Naioth. So this is an interesting story where there is actually a little bit of deception involved, which you think, okay, deception is bad, but God still used this situation for his benefit to protect his chosen servant. And I think this is actually a really interesting story because in my mind, I would think this would never work. I'm going to make a bed and put clothes underneath it and put an image and a little bit of goat's hair for its hair, and that's going to look like a person. Yeah, I bet if I tried that, it would not work. But believe it or not, it actually might work. I've had a personal experience with this at college, of course. You never know what you'll expect at college. But I walked into someone's room, one of my friends. I was going to meet him we're going to go to get coffee or something like that. And I walk in his room, and I see his roommate's bed, and there's he's in there. Okay, so he's taking a nap, and I'm going to be quiet, so I'm just kind of walking around. And then my friend comes out, and is just like, hi, Russell, how are you doing? I'm like, wait, your roommate's asleep. He's like, oh, you actually thought that was my roommate? And they had a mannequin head. I don't know why. I didn't ask, because you don't really ask those type of things. But they had a mannequin head, and it was turned towards the wall, and I thought it was a person. So taking a nap, and I was trying to be nice. But so apparently this does actually work. But it worked for Michal. I guess it can work for my roommate too. But anyway, so Michal tries to use this tactic to deceive the messengers that Saul sent, and it works. And it's just interesting to see that, you know, God can use different circumstances that maybe that wasn't the right decision for her to do, that sometimes you can see that that almost shows a lack of trust in God to be take control of the situation. But he used the situation nonetheless for his benefit to protect his chosen one. And at the end, she says that when she answered Saul, she said, and he said to me, let me go. Why should I kill you? And I thought that was an interesting phrase, but when you look at it, she basically was saying that David said, you better let me go or else I'm going to kill you. So she said she was defending herself by letting him go. And it just shows kind of her lack of trust. She thought that she had this whole situation handled, and it did end up working, but she could have just trusted in God for him to have the whole situation covered. And this actually will end up being her downfall in 2 Samuel chapter 6, that she has more of a focus on David than she does on God. And that starts out here, and it continues the process until her final downfall. But we can see that God still is in control. He has saved David for yet a third time in this chapter alone. So as it says verse 18, David fled and escaped and went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and stayed in Naioth. And now we get to the last scene of this chapter. It says, now it was told Saul, saying, take note, David is at Naioth in Ramah. Then Saul sent messengers to take David. And when they saw the group of prophets prophesying, and Samuel standing as leader over them, and the Spirit of God came upon the messenger of Saul, and they also prophesied. And when Saul was told, he sent other messengers, and they prophesied likewise. Then Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they prophesied also. Then he also went to Ramah and came to a great well that is at Seku. So he asked and said, where are Samuel and David? And someone said, indeed, they are at Naioth and Ramah. So he went there to Naioth and Ramah. Then the Spirit of God was upon him also. And he went on and prophesied until he came to Naioth and Ramah. And he also stripped off his clothes and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? Now this is a very interesting story. It is a amazing showcase of God's power. In the first half of this story, Saul hears that, okay, David has gone to Ramah, which is actually only about 3 miles away from where they were. So it's not very far down the road. So he says, okay, messengers, I'm going to send you, and you're going to go get them. And the first set goes, and the Spirit of God comes on them, and they begin prophesying. Now, that's a very interesting way for God to stop a group of messengers. You know, normally you could think, well, he could open up the earth, and they could fall in, or he could strike them with lightning, or there's a lot of ways that God can show his power. But in this instance, he causes them to prophesy and praise him. So he causes people that are under the ruler of Israel to be completely taken over by the ruler of the universe himself. He has them so incapacitated by prophesying that they aren't able to get to David. And this doesn't happen just once. Saul, I don't know what he was thinking. He was probably like, okay, well, they haven't come back yet, so we probably should send some more. So he sends another group, and they go, and they begin prophesying, and then I guess we'll send another one. We got a few more. And he sends a third group, and they begin prophesying. And Saul must have thought, okay, I got to go do this myself. You know, God has chosen me. I'm the king. I can handle this. So he goes down to Ramah, and actually, a little bit difference in the text here, he begins prophesying before he even gets there. And it's amazing that God completely overtakes him, and you think, okay, that's kind of normal, because the Spirit of God should be with the king. And actually, in chapter 10, the Spirit of God came upon Saul, and he prophesied, and that was the sign that he was the one that God had chosen for the king. It showed a complete difference from him and the others. But now in this time, God uses it in a completely different manner. He overtakes him, and he prophesies until he comes to Samuel. And it says that he stripped off his clothes and prophesied before Samuel in like manner and lay down naked all that day and all that night. And that actually was, God used that to show his complete shame. And being the nakedness in that time even was complete shame. And to be in front of the prophet of God as the king all day and all night was one of the most shameful things that you could have done. And God uses that to show that I am rejecting him. I am completely against Saul. I am going to let him have the complete shame that I caused because I was over him. And we see a dramatic shift through this whole passage of just God completely rejecting Saul and lifting up David. He has protected David through this entire passage of four times trying to be killed. But he has put Saul down over and over and ends it with a complete shame. And the last saying that it says is, therefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? And this was actually a saying that they started when he first prophesied when he was chosen. They said, is Saul also among the prophets? They were amazed that he was prophesying. But in this time, it's kind of like, is Saul also among the prophets? You know, it's more of a mock. They were thinking like, so this is who we have now? This is the chosen one? But God was showing his complete rejection of Saul. And it's amazing as we see how this whole passage lays out, just the sovereignty of God in the circumstances. The circumstances are not good for David. They are dangerous. They are troublesome. He is at constant fleeing from Saul. But God uses people, as in Jonathan, who spoke the truth and showed this, you're going to be sinning against an innocent man if you kill him. He used Michal, who, yes, she deceived him, but God still used her act to be able to protect David. He even used his own divine intervention in causing all of the messengers to prophesy and causing Saul himself to be openly rejected. And you can just see how God is completely in all this. He is showing his favor to his faithful servant, David. But he's also showing his complete rejection of Saul, the one who has sinned against him, who has had bitterness and jealousy. And as we see throughout the whole book of 1 Samuel, he was not the one that God ultimately wanted as king in Israel. He was the one that he used to show judgment, but it's not the one that he purposed for Israel to have. So I ask you, as you look through these, are you someone that God can use? or are you someone that God would reject? Are you speaking truth to help others, like Jonathan did? He spoke complete truth in order to save David from his father Saul. Are you someone that God would have used in that way? Or are you someone that you have everything is planned out for yourself? You're selfish. You have all these desires that you want for yourself, and you're willing to do anything to get it. Or will you say, God, here I am. I don't understand some of the circumstances that you put me under. I don't understand why I have to be in constant danger, why I have to be under constant persecution. But I'm going to serve you, and I am going to completely dedicate my life and trust in you. That's what I would challenge you all to examine your own lives and see, okay, there's tough situations that I'm in, but I know that God is in control. And he might even be using the bad situations to accomplish his future plans. So trust in the fact that God is sovereign in your circumstances. And examine your own life to see if you are someone that he would choose to use instead of choose to reject. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I do thank you for just the fact that you are in control of all of our circumstances, the fact that you love us, you want to use us for your benefit. I pray that we would look to you and look at our own lives and how we function and how we treat others and even treat you, and if we are glorifying you in everything that we say and do. And I pray that we would trust in you and desire to be one of those that you have chosen to do your work, and that we would serve you faithfully. In Jesus' name, pray. Amen.